You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church, located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. We wish to acknowledge that we are on the traditional territory of the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nations lands, which lands were previously occupied by the Seneca and Huron-Wendat First Nations. We have three readings this morning. Our first meeting comes from Brené Brown, from The Power of Vulnerability, Teachings of Authenticity, Connections, and Courage. No one reaches out to you for compassion or empathy so you can teach them how to behave better. They reach out to us because they believe in our capacity to know our darkness well enough to sit in the dark with them. Our second reading comes from J.K. Rowling. Imagination is not only the unique human capacity to envision that which is not, and therefore the fount of all invention and innovation. In its arguability most transformative and revelatory capacity, it is the power that enables us to empathize with humans whose experiences we have never shared, and may prefer not to exercise their imaginations at all. And many prefer not to exercise their imaginations at all. They choose to remain comfortably within the bounds of their own experience, never troubling to wonder how it would feel to have been born other than they are. They can refuse to hear screams or peer inside cages. They can close their minds and hearts to any suffering that does not touch them personally. They can refuse to know. Those who choose not to empathize enable real monsters. For without ever committing an act of outright evil ourselves, we collude with it through our own apathy. Our third reading comes from Frederick Buchner, Whistling in the Dark, A Doubter's Dictionary. If we are to love our neighbors, before anything else, we must see our neighbors with our imagination as well as our eyes. That is to say, like artists, we must not see just their faces, but the life behind and vision within their faces. Here it is love that is the frame we see them in. Offered as wisdom for the journey.
Before I move into our focus moment, I neglected to mention that if you were fresh out of $100 bills or you didn't bring your checkbook or your credit cards, you can bring it back next week and drop it into the regular collection. I'll also mention that Florence will be at the back of the church following the service, and she'll have our square readers. So if you would like to make a contribution with a credit card, that would be wonderful. Our focus moment this morning was written by Jeanette LeBlanc, and it's from her blog called Sacred Tremor. We are in this together. None of us is truly in isolation. Even when we cannot sense the presence of another for miles upon miles, even in the worst of our desolation, even during our coldest 3 a.m. breakdown, even when we shut out the world and spin in circles until we collapse, even then the light still gets in. And even then the heart still opens and reaches, tendrils of hope curling and bending towards slivers of light, upward, outward, in all directions, seeking light at all costs. one way or another, we all grow towards the light. One of the best things about being up here behind the microphone, being a conductor from time to time, is that I get the pleasure of introducing some pretty cool people. And our guest speaker this morning, Dwayne Morgan, fits that category for sure. This is a return engagement for Dwayne. This is his third time with us, and we're delighted that he's rejoined us to share his thoughts and his perspectives with us. So let me tell you a little bit about him. And I had to do a lot of cutting because there was a great deal that I found. Dwayne has many talents. A motivational speaker, entrepreneur, social justice advocate, author, educator, community trailblazer. He began his career as a spoken word artist in 1993 and was a founder of Up From The Roots Entertainment, established to promote the positive artistic contributions of African-Canadian and urban-influenced artists. He received both the African-Canadian Achievement Award for Youth Achievement and the Harry Jerome Award for Excellence in the Arts in 1998. Dwayne has self-published two chapbooks. I had to go and look up what chapbooks meant. These are small booklets, kind of a cross between a pocketbook and a booklet, I think, something like that, and three full volumes of poetry. For years, Dwayne has used his artistic leadership to help transform communities and help youth find their voice while bringing awareness to discriminatory barriers to greater social and economic success. He was inducted into the Scarborough Walk of Fame for his commitment to the culture and people of Scarborough. And this March, Dwayne was nominated as a candidate for the New Democratic Party in Scarborough North for the upcoming 2018 Ontario provincial election. So now please join me in extending a warm West Hill welcome to our guest, Dwayne Morgan.
All right, thank you very much. It is a great honor to be back here. This is my third time now visiting the congregation, and I've had an excellent experience in my previous two times. So when the email came in asking if I would like to come back, it was a very easy answer because I love coming here, and I love the vibe and the energy and the feel of the congregation here, and it's just such a great opportunity that I have to share some of my thoughts and my ideas with you. As you heard in the introduction, I found out that I was an artist when I was around 18 years old. Prior to that, I had no desire or inclinations around anything that had to do with the arts. And it was a couple women who heard a poem that I had written, who told me or convinced me that I actually had talent. And those two women, for some reason, took a liking to me, invested their time in me when they didn't even know who I was. And they worked on me until I realized that I had something. And oftentimes, you know, we have something and we don't even know it. Sometimes it takes other people to help us to realize the gifts that we actually have. And I am always grateful to these two women who saw a young kid and invested their time into making sure that I understood that I had something that was of value, that I was of value. And these are things that they didn't have to do. They weren't being paid to do it. They just understood the benefits that come from giving to other people. So since that time, I have spent much of my life and my career trying to emulate what was done for me by giving of myself to as many people as possible in as many different places and as many different ways as possible, because I think one of the greatest gifts that we can give is the gift of ourselves. And oftentimes we forget how much we have to give, our endless capacity to love, And oftentimes we hoard that within our own communities, within our own families, but the world is so big and the world actually needs more love and more of us sharing the gifts that we have. When we look at the world today, we see a world that is filled with divisions. We are divided by race, by sex, by abilities, by language, by gender, by religion, by all of these things. And, you know, despite all of the divisions, one of the things that we all have in common is the desire to be loved, understood, accepted. So it really doesn't matter about all of these divisions, because at the end of the day, at our very core and essence as people, we all want the same thing. We all want to have the same experience that we are going to have, that we can have in life. Unfortunately, depending on where we are born, how we look, what circumstances we are born into, how we experience life is often very different, right? So I decided today that I wanted to speak about empathy and look at empathy as a courageous act of love. And I wanted to speak about this because I do a lot of work in the schools, a lot of work with young people. And the world that is coming up, this younger generation, based on technology and all of these things, there are very human values that are being lost. We have many young people who are socially awkward because they don't actually talk to anybody. They only do stuff on their phone. They only text. They are on all the social media. So the ability to actually have a conversation and articulate themselves is something that is not even being practiced, because when they do things with their friends, everything is just done through these messages and that sort of thing. And there's nothing that can replace real social interaction in terms of how we connect to each other. So even something that might be seen as simple as the greeting we did at the very beginning, where we all go around and we greet each other, those things are so important, because where the world is changing into a place that is so cold where we don't even touch each other, we don't hug each other, there's no opportunity to even shake somebody's hand because we're just so accustomed now to doing everything through the use of technology. And in the long run, I believe this will have a very negative impact on how we interact with each other as human beings. You know, we have young people today, I have a daughter who's 11, we have young people today who, instead of going outside to play a game of soccer, they'll find a thing on their phone and play soccer on their phone, which completely defeats the purpose of playing soccer, because now you're not even playing the soccer game, you're just on your phone going like this and thinking that you're playing soccer. So again, there's aspects of real life, real interactions that we are missing, and it becomes harder to be empathetic to people around us when we are no longer interacting with the people who are around us. So it is very important that we get back into the idea of human interaction. The last two March breaks, I brought my daughter to Jamaica. My mother spends the winters there now, so she built a house there. And one of the reasons why I wanted to do this, other than getting a break from the Canadian winter, is I wanted her to experience things that I experienced when I was younger, but also a different way of life. And, you know, in Jamaica, especially in the rural areas where my mother lives, every single person who walks by the house, whether you know them or not, you have to say good morning, good afternoon, good night, no matter what. The worst thing you could do is let somebody walk by and you do not acknowledge them. And this is just how it is. It doesn't matter if you're an elder. It doesn't matter if you're a child. If somebody is walking by, everybody greets everybody. And, you know, we would be, you know, walking down the street and somebody would walk by and I would say hello and they would say hello to me, and then she wouldn't say anything. And I'm like, hey, you got to remember, every single person, you have to acknowledge every single person. And by the end of the week, she finally got it, and everywhere we went, every time we interacted, she always greeted people. And I think that this is so important, because when you come back here, nobody greets anybody. right? Nobody talks to anybody. If I don't already know you, nobody, we don't talk outside of our little network of people. You know, we don't say, hey, good morning, how you doing? We don't just stop and have, you know, random conversations. And one of the beautiful things about the area where my mother lives is that almost everybody, well, a lot of people have different crops that grow, you know, in their, on their property. You know, my mother has a mango tree and stuff like that. So somebody will walk by and just give bananas from their tree. And my mother will just give somebody mangoes from their tree. And it's just this way of saying, hey, have something. Here's a little gift. You don't have to give me anything back for it. But it's just a way of living and experiencing life that is quite often lost in this, you know, we say, well, we're in the first world and stuff like that. But we're still missing out on a lot. Some of the places that I have gone to in the world where we say, have nothing, the people are more empathetic, the people are happier, the people are living better lives and are more engaged with each other and their communities because they actually value the interaction with each other. And I think as our world becomes more and more cold and isolated because of technology, we have to make a deliberate effort to maintain that human interaction with people that we engage with and people that we interact with. I turned on my TV the other night and I heard this woman singing, and the words of her song really got me thinking, what if God was really one of us? What if God was that man that we see on the bus listening to us cuss and fuss and discuss, the man that we don't know but we still choose to make fun of? What if he was there as a test to see how we treat those who God has blessed with life? What if God was that man that we see on the street asking for spare change or something to eat as we walk by pretending not to see? What if he was checking how charitable we would be when we come across those who are truly in need? What if God was that woman we see and we curse for not knowing her true value or her true worth, standing on the street corner, clenching her purse, seeing if we'll offer kind words or if we'll treat her like dirt? It is said that God will return as a thief in the night with no pronounced arrival for those who want to worship or hide, which is why we need to live each day as if God were right here. After all, we are all made in the image of the Creator, and though we should not worship mortal men, acknowledge the presence of the Savior in every woman, man, and child. We need to love one another, never knowing when we will be on trial. What would you say if you came face to face with God, not knowing until it was too late? Did you smile when you walked by, or did you cut your eye? You see, we are to be living as sisters and brothers, treating our elders as fathers and mothers, doing unto others as we would have done unto us. You see, many believe that God will return for the chosen. But what if God is already riding the bus? Now, that is one of the poems that I wrote way back when I was much younger than I am now. And that poem is still relevant to this day because it is a reflection of how I live. And, you know, no matter where I go, I always treat people as though they're special, as though there's something that I can learn from them, as though, you know, we are in this together, as we heard in one of the readings, right? And I think that this is so important because it is so easy to just write people off because of how they look or because of the judgments that we have in our heads. And I believe it is so necessary for us as people to be invested in the people that we meet. Every time we meet somebody, there's no guarantee that we will ever meet them again. But that doesn't mean that you cannot make a lasting impression in that person's life the very first time you interact with them. But you just have to be willing to put yourself out there and understand that you have something to give. And not everybody's going to be at a place in their life to be able to receive what you have to give, but that doesn't mean that you stop trying to give it. You just have to keep giving it, and hopefully those people who can receive it will receive it. So when we look at empathy, the keys to empathy is there has to be a desire to understand. There has to be a desire to understand who are these people around me? Who are these people that I am interacting with? When you turn on, you know, the news, when you listen to reporters, you read the newspaper, when you go on the internet, there are always people trying to define things for us. But the greatest learning that you can ever do is by actually just speaking to someone and finding out firsthand, who is this person, right? No, not just letting other people decide for us who someone is. Because we've seen throughout history what can happen when other people define a group of people or a single person. And if we took the time to investigate on our own, we might not agree with some of those things. We might see a different perspective, a different view, have a different understanding of who this person or who this group is. So having empathy always will come down to the question, why? Why is this person like this? And why, as a question, comes with a lot of responsibilities, which is why a lot of people don't ask why, and why a lot of people are okay to let other people define things for them, because when you ask why, you have to stick around for the answer. When you ask why, you have to be willing to listen to the answer as to why is this person like this. Because oftentimes, you know, we will have stereotypes and all these things, and we'll say, well, black people are like this. But there's probably nothing that all black people have in common. Just the same with any group of people. There's probably nothing that they all have in common other than what makes them a part of that group. And in order to see that difference, you have to actually speak to someone. If there's something you want to know, you have to be willing to ask why. And then stick around for the answer. Right? It's not like when you say, hey, how are you? And people say, fine, and you just keep walking. Well, what does fine mean? Because there are people who are struggling every single day. And if you ask them 100 times how they're doing, they will say okay or fine 100 times. But they are struggling. When you go to work, maybe when you come to church, you have no idea what somebody next to you has gone through since the last time you saw them. And you might ask them, and they might just say, I'm fine. But they're sitting there, and they are struggling. They have burdens that they're trying to figure out what to do with. But unless we create a society and a situation where we feel safe sharing with each other, they will still struggle and say that they are okay. Because we need to make sure that as people, we create the platform that allows people to feel safe to answer, to be honest, to know that if they answer, they're not going to be judged for their answer. That you can actually listen to them with a compassionate ear. That you will actually find the time to listen. Most people, when they say fine or okay, it's because they know you don't even have the time to listen anyways. You probably couldn't even tell me if they said fine or okay because you were already gone by the time they said it, right? But we have to remember to be invested in each other as human beings and as people, right? Oftentimes, we want to be right. We have a certain perspective about a group of people or a certain situation, and we want so much to be right that we aren't even willing to listen to the answer as to why. Because if the answer is different from what we think, we're not interested in that. Because then it causes us to now question stuff. And who wants to do all that mental work of questioning things? It's so much easier to just believe whatever we want to believe. Ignorance is easy. Having knowledge and understanding takes work, takes commitment. But it is the only thing that will change the society that we live in to one that is more empathetic and compassionate and more filled with love. We have to be willing to invest in each other. 6 o'clock in the evening, my TV turned on. And I prepare to watch emotionless robots telling me about the day's destruction with few interruptions but for the occasional commercial designed to bring us back to reality. And I wonder what type of human being can tell me these things without getting emotionally involved when suddenly my TV dissolved and became a mirror, forcing me to look at myself. And I realize that I see dead people every night on my TV screen, and I'm so desensitized that I watch and I continue to eat. And what that says to me is that we have a problem. We have become comfortable with things that aren't right in our faces. Nameless faces, bodies lie dead in streets with no names as warplanes fly overhead and bloodshed is as common as the sun's rising. The writing of this piece was inspired by a young girl named Sumitra, whose life changed in a matter of seconds. Walking with her family, get down, her mother beckoned. There was a bomb blast. Her dad, who walked beside her, now found his body twisted in the wreckage. Still alive, he tried to send her a message that he loves her, which he packaged and sent on his last breath. It tore her apart to have to watch her father's death. Her mother, bloodied and bruised, picked her up from the rubble and brought her to safety. A year later, she arrived safely in this land of mine with no friends, no family, just happy to be alive, happy to not hear bombs going off in the middle of the night. Her mom's nervous and fears letting her outside. Every day, she goes to school with a picture of her dad in her backpack. Every Father's Day, she's haunted by flashbacks, unable to hold the tears back. They flow like blood in the war-torn streets that she's left. And we have to recognize that we all connect like computers in a LAN. There are many more like Sumitra living in this land. Young boys who have packed their childhood into chambers, becoming soldiers, fighting in wars they're too young to understand. Young girls who are prisoners in their own homes because their streets are no longer safe. And we often sit back and say, what's wrong with those people over there? But what's wrong with us here? You see, those people, they're just trying to survive, trying to get by, trying to deal with the terror and the burden that life has forced them to handle. They're the ones dealing with reality while we have the luxury to change the channel. So I wrote that poem just to look at the situation with refugees and what's happening. I hear a lot of talk and people complaining about all the refugees, you know, coming to Toronto, coming to Ontario. And the important thing to note is that there's no refugee who wants to come here. We complain all the time about them coming, but there is no refugee who wants to come here. Everyone who comes here as a refugee would much rather be home, be in their environment, be in their culture that they are used to. They wish they didn't have to be uprooted and go to some place where they know absolutely nobody and nothing, but because of what is happening in their homes, they are fleeing so that they have the opportunity to live. But do we look at this situation with empathy? When we complain about all of these people coming here, do we ask ourselves, why? Why are they coming? What is it that they are fleeing from? Do we take the time, or do we just think, well, this is ours, and we don't want anyone else here? But that attitude and that idea of this is ours, and we don't want anyone else here, goes right back to the beginning of today's service with the land acknowledgement. Because there were people here whose land we are now on. So we don't really own anything, right? This is just shared space where we share stories and our lives intersect, maybe every Sunday, sometimes during the week. But that's what it is to be alive. We constantly live and we constantly intersect with people. Some of them who will have an impact on our lives, others who will not. So we have to look at everything that is happening around us through the lens of empathy, with compassion, and always be willing to ask, why? People always talk about multiculturalism and, you know, Canada, Ontario being such a multicultural place. And we have often... well, not often, we have completely missed the mark in terms of multiculturalism. Now, we can look in our society and we can see a million different cultures, a million different languages being spoken, all sorts of different restaurants and stuff, but multiculturalism doesn't truly exist until we actually understand the cultures that are around us. It doesn't matter if the person next to you is Muslim if you don't take the time to understand Ramadan, if you don't take the time to understand why they wear a hijab, if you don't invest into understanding the people who are around you. Our school system, if Canada is going to say this is a multicultural country, our school system has to teach multiculturalism. It has to teach this is what these people have contributed to Canada and this is what these people have contributed to Canada. We have to have a knowledge of collectively what have all of these cultures brought to this country. Right? So that we begin to actually see value in each other, so that we actually understand that everyone around us has played a vital role in making this what it is. And then when you celebrate, I celebrate with you. And when I'm celebrating, you come and you celebrate with me. because we have that level of understanding for each other. And we understand, as was said in the reading, that we are all in this together. And that is when we can truly speak about multiculturalism, because we actually have taken the time to understand each other, right? So multiculturalism, empathy, it requires curiosity to wonder, who are these people around me? What makes them different? What makes them special? What makes them tick, right? And you have to want to know, and then go out and find the answer. But don't find the answer by searching on Google. Find the answer by talking to someone, asking someone about their life, and being genuinely interested in the answer. Because you never know, someone who might seem completely opposite from you might end up being a lifelong friend, simply from that desire to know, right? It requires effort. Judgment is easy, but as I said before, having knowledge requires a bit more effort. Imagine, it was 4 a.m. when she woke me, and I can still remember the cold sweat on the back of my neck like it was yesterday. 11 years have now passed, and I can still remember the pregnancy test in my hand and how it felt like my heart and my world had stopped simultaneously. And nobody knows this. But at every doctor's visit, as he would perform routine ultrasounds, I would look from the ground to the screen, hoping, praying to God that none of the images that I was seeing would confirm this little being as a boy. And I don't feel good about it. But I've lived a long time in skin despised simply for its hue, so every November I go populist, not out of disrespect. I'm just not a fan of Remembrance Day, remembering that there has never been a plane sent to save us. We are the displaced. Our bodies and religion stolen, we were given a new prophet as they used us to make profits. Ask Nike what a black man is worth. For hundreds of years, we have been killed as a form of amusement, gunned down with no fear of repercussions, so don't blame me for not wanting to be burdened by the birth of a black boy born into a world built on his back, forcing me to teach him how to write and his rights, knowing that even my greatest efforts can't keep him alive when his skin is a threat. So yes, I stood there, staring blankly at a screen, hoping, praying to God that none of the squiggly lines that I was seeing would confirm this little being as a boy. Maybe having a girl would increase my chances of not having a child who'd grow up to be a hashtag trending, because the killing of black men has been a trend since forever. So we write Black Lives Matter, not to try to inform others, but to try to convince ourselves in a world that is constantly telling us otherwise. And my heart can't help but break for those parents who have had their children snatched from their lives. It was an April afternoon when I found myself pacing around a delivery room, wondering if my prayers would be answered. At 3:20, the most precious little girl was presented to me, and I cried uncontrollably for hours, knowing that I had just been blessed. Not because having a girl will make her worth more, but because we live in a world where black boys will always be worth less. So imagine, we live in a society today where there are parents who actually have this thought process, right? I don't want to have a boy because I don't know if he's going to be killed. I don't know if he's going to be incarcerated. I don't know what is going to happen to him because of the society that we live in today. What does that do to someone's mental health as a parent who has to be thinking about all of these other arbitrary things in order to protect their child and keep them safe in the society that we live in? When we see people, we often have no idea what is the storm that is brewing inside of them. But sometimes through curiosity, through loving words, through empathy, we can be the calm to that storm. But we have to be willing to be invested in the lives of the people around us. We have to understand that we can only rise to the heights of whoever's the lowest in our society. So that means we have to be invested in bringing up every single person that we see who might be struggling, who might need a little bit of help, who might need a little bit of understanding. Every one of us is shaped by our experiences in life. And sometimes two people who go through the same experience will be shaped very differently based on that experience, because what happened to you before that will also impact how you deal with that experience that you have had. When you look at someone like Nelson Mandela, who was imprisoned for 27 years for fighting for freedom, and then comes out of jail and doesn't hate the people who stole 27 years of his life. Not everybody would come out of that situation in that way, right? But we are all shaped by every single thing that happens to us. There was a young man at a school in Pickering that I went to visit last year. And he's a young black student, maybe in around grade 11. And he opened up to me and he said he was walking back to class from the washroom. And one of the teachers said to him, "Are you smart enough to not be in class right now?" And to see the shame on this young man's face because a teacher said that to him, what does that do for someone's self-esteem, for someone's sense of self? And if there is a rage within that young man, people will blame him for the rage. They will never blame the person who lit the fire of the rage, because too often we keep that locked inside, right? And people only see what happens outwardly. But we have to ask, why? Why did this happen? What sparked the rage in this young person? And that is where the empathy comes in. It's not enough to just look at what happens on the outside. I have teachers all the time who say to me, like, they see how kids, you know, interact and share with me, and they say, "I've been working with this kid the whole year. I can't get him to pull his pants up. I can't get him to change his attitude. I can't do..." And I say to them, that's because you're focused on the outside. Whatever you see on the outside is a reflection of what is happening on the inside. If you want to get some movement from that young person, invest on the inside. Because until you deal with what is happening on the inside, you'll never see any form of change on the outside. And that holds true for all of us. What we see on the outside is a reflection of what is happening on the inside, and it is far too easy to judge one another by what we see on the outside when we can just start investigating what might be happening on the inside. Now, a funny story that almost, or I guess kind of ties in with empathy before I start wrapping it up, is I was flying to Victoria, BC with a friend of mine, and this is a rather large friend that I have, and we're both sitting beside each other on the plane, and we're trying to be as comfortable as possible. We get to Victoria, and I don't even know how the conversation came up about the flight, but we were just talking about the flight, and he was saying, you know, he was sitting in the seat, and he was so self-conscious of his size that he kept on trying to make himself smaller so that I would have enough space and I would feel comfortable. And, you know, in his head, that he was just doing that because, you know, he was self-conscious about his weight. And I said to him, well, it's funny because I was on the plane and I was trying to make myself smaller so that you could have a bit more space so that you could feel comfortable. And so in our heads, we were both considering the other person, and we had no idea for this whole flight that he was trying to shrink and I was trying to shrink so that we could both feel comfortable. But that is empathy. That is actually considering somebody else, not wanting to make them feel, you know, some kind of negative kind of way, and then doing something about it. I mean, that's a more fun way of looking at it, but that's, at the end of the day, that's what it is. That's what it came down to. Now, the last thing that I want to share when I look at empathy as an act of love is that one of the greatest things that we can do in terms of empathy is being empathetic with ourselves. Because many times we are horrible to ourselves. Doesn't matter what other people will say to you, what other people will do to you, oftentimes we will do worse to ourselves. We will have very negative conversations with ourselves. And I encourage you to be empathetic with yourself, to be willing to forgive yourself for mistakes that you may have made. If life didn't turn out the way you thought it was going to turn out, forgive yourself for it. Understand that every day is a new day. Every day is a clean slate, and you get to choose what you're going to paint on that day, right? And every one of us is a masterpiece in the making, every single day being revised, every single day new layers are being added to the masterpiece. But we have to forgive ourselves and understand that we are a masterpiece, a piece of art that is constantly in the making. And if you believe that you are supposed to be perfect, you have completely missed the mark. Because every single thing that you think is wrong with you is every single thing that is perfect with you. Because everything that you think is wrong with you is something that you can use to teach somebody else, that you can use to empower somebody else. But you have to own all the good and all the bad, right? When I go to schools and I talk to young people, I give them an assignment where I tell them to go home after they take a shower, look at themselves in the mirror, and tell themselves how beautiful they are. Because oftentimes we only see our beauty when we're done up, when we have our favorite outfit on, you know, when we got, you know, we just got our hair did, our makeup, and all this sort of stuff. But I believe that we have to get to a point where we understand how beautiful we are with absolutely nothing. When we wake up in the morning, we affirm our greatness, we affirm who we are, we affirm our potential, we affirm our mistakes. Because there's no one in this room who's free of mistakes. We all make them, and it comes down to what are you going to do with them? Because every mistake is a teaching opportunity and a learning opportunity. But so many of us are scared to make mistakes. We don't want the shame that comes with the mistakes. But if the only way to not make mistakes is to not do anything, right? As long as you're trying to do something, mistakes are going to happen. It's a part of life. And anyone who has achieved anything in life can tell you all of the mistakes that they made in order to achieve whatever it is that they wanted to achieve. So mistakes are a part of the process. So you might as well embrace them, right? Don't try to keep making them over and over again, but embrace the mistakes that we make and be empathetic with ourselves as well. So my last words will come in the form of a final poem. And again, this is just a reminder in this poem that when we interact with each other, we often have no idea what burdens the person we are interacting with is carrying. And just being empathetic can completely make someone's day and change everything that is going on with them in that moment. 3 months ago, 3 words sent my world into a tailspin. I must have asked him to repeat himself at least three times just to make sure that I was hearing him right, and each time he repeated the same 3 words, "I have cancer." And to this day, I'm still in shock. And every time I tried to talk with him, he was busy or probably just avoiding me. The thought of him passing has haunted me like a recurring nightmare, but there he was, opening the door to a flood of emotions and questions I couldn't find the words to ask. I was happy to still have him, but upset at the cards that he'd been dealt. I sat in the awkward silence trying to deal with the... I forgot the next line of that poem. All right, let me rewind it a little bit and start again so that I can remember that line. 3 months ago, 3 words set my world into a tailspin. I must have asked him to repeat himself at least 3 times just to make sure that I was hearing him right, and each time he repeated the same 3 words, "I have cancer." And to this day, I'm still in shock. And every time he tried to talk with me, I was busy or probably just avoiding me. The thought of him passing has haunted me like a recurring nightmare, but there he was, opening the door to a flood of emotions and questions I couldn't find the words to ask. I was glad to still have him, but upset at the cards that he'd been dealt. I sat in the awkward silence, growing increasingly angry with myself and my inadequacies. I wanted to tell him how much those 3 words had affected me, but silence was all that I had. Then, like a precious artifact slipping through a toddler's hands, he broke it, shattering it with the soft tone of his voice as he said that today, someone will find out that the person that they are living for is dying. And right now as we speak, there's a woman trying to find the words to tell her children that she's contracted HIV, and tonight a phone receiver will hit the floor as a mother learns that her son will never return through her door. It doesn't take much for our entire lives to change. That split second when you look away to try to reach your cell phone, the electrical fire in the middle of the night, none of us knows what's next in our lives, and sometimes we just need a wake-up call to remind us of how precious every moment is. I've never felt such pride and joy in my kids. I've noticed how differently the air smells in the morning, and I've slowed down, taking time out for family and friends, because in the end, this is it. tomorrow might be too late. And at the end of the day, life is worth more than paychecks. It's about people and experiences. So I've gone skydiving and hot air balloon riding, placing ticks to the left and lines for the items on my bucket list. He said that those who live with hope always die happy, and that he was hoping for the best. No longer taking people and things for granted. And through his own admission, he was once too much of a man to show his emotions, but now shows love like a film on life's movie screen. And even though he was never able to do it before, every morning before his wife leaves through the door, he lets her know that he loves her more than he did yesterday, and less than he will should he be blessed with a tomorrow. And knowing him, that hit me like a kick to the ribs in mixed martial arts. This man, who had always been so hard, was now pouring out his heart like a libation. And I couldn't understand why he seemed so happy while I couldn't stop myself from crying. We hugged, a manly hug, as he said confidently in my ear that you will never truly live until you can live like you were dying. Thank you all very much.
If you're feeling anything like I'm feeling right now, you just want to just take a second and just kind of take a couple of deep breaths and reflect on what Dwayne has shared with us. I'm going to ask the ushers if they would do me the big favor of taking up that second collection at this point in time. Thanking someone when they present so beautifully, so eloquently, is always a challenge for me because I have a tendency to want to write down all the things that I heard that I thought were important. And I have a whole page full of things that I wanted to share back to Dwayne and say thank you for this and thank you for that. You talked about a couple of ladies who invested in you when you were 18 years of age. And it's been a real pleasure for us to be recipients of that gift that has matured and grown. And I just want to say, I would just love the opportunity to find another venue other than having you up here, of having you around in a circle and being able to just listen to your poetry, because it touched me here, and it touched me here, and it touched me here. And I really need some help of revisiting it and kind of unpacking it. Marshall McLuhan spoke about the medium and the message. He said the medium is the message. In your case, you brought us both medium and message. The things that touched me. The greatest gift we can give ourselves is our endless capacity for love. Nothing can replace real social interaction as we get increasingly immersed in today's and tomorrow's technology. Human interaction allows us to strive to be invested in the people we meet. The one I liked the best was, when you ask why, you gotta stick around for the answer. As soon as you say why, you open that door to engagement. One of our most important needs, I think, is, although we sometimes really want to be right, I think most often we want to be heard. And that came through very loud and clear as an undertone for everything there. That is what empathy is about. That is what love is about. And you closed with, we are each a masterpiece. And I felt like I was watching you share your brush strokes with us around who you are. You were creating a masterpiece with your words that you shared with us this morning, this afternoon. So I would like to express my thanks and the thanks of everybody that's here this morning. And I have a little something for you. You gave me such a great segue into closing our service this morning. There was made mention of yesterday's wedding and the celebration. In this morning's Star, there was the article is entitled U.S. Bishop's Love Sermon Steals the Windsor Show. And so as you introduce love to this place, I wanted to read some of his words. This is the Reverend, Most Reverend Michael Bruce Curry, and he talked about love. And here's something that I just thought was awesome for that kind of service. It says, love can change the world. If you don't believe me, just stop and think and imagine. Well, think and imagine a world where love is the way. Imagine our homes and families when love is the way. Imagine neighborhoods, communities where love is the way. Imagine governments and nations where love is the way. Imagine business and commerce where love is the way. Imagine this tired old world when love is the way. When love is the way, then no child will go to bed hungry in this world ever again. And I read that, and I've mentioned from time to time things that strike me as a West Hill moment. Well, that struck me as a West Hill moment. As I was reading that, I was hearkening back to Vision Works. I was thinking about services that Greta has given us. And Greta weaves love into everything that she shares with us in one way or another. And so I felt really compelled to share that with you this morning. It's so beautiful. So I would say, as you leave this place today, embrace love. Try and find nuggets from what Dwayne shared with us this morning that you can go forward and actually use in some kind of actionable way. Because that's the key here, is not to just take it away and file it up here somewhere. It's to take it away and express it to the world. So thank you again, Wayne, and go in peace.
Listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.